The very famous
Fortnite.
It's from Farmington, Missouri. I know that's true.
It's found in the musical fruit.
Yeah.
There is a mineral named Millerite.
Copyrighted.
I don't drink light minerals.
There is a mineral named Nitrite.
Definitely.
Log it in.
Ah, dang it! Alright, let's see how this turned out.
Come on.
All I care about is beating you.
Ah!
Oh, man! Who's Stairway to 7?
Stairway to 7. Great username.
Oh, man! Look at
great
that!
Great username.
He knocked us way down.
Maverick's in the
11th. Where 11th. Are you,
Maverick? I'm in 11th.
Oh, my God. Well, I'll get you. That's all I really care about. Alright, we'll be playing this later this month. I feel like the game show music's going to be great for my sermon. Let's just keep that going.
Alright, well, I'm off to take some Fucalite.
I'm hoping not to vomitite. Well, it's difficult, isn't it, to spot a lie? And no one was perfect? That would have really ruined my sermon if someone had a perfect score, but I don't think any of us were perfect at that. I know I wasn't. I get sucked in if they're all lies. I was that kid in school, like if it was false, 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 you go, I know something has to be true soon, right? So it's like, I got sucked in a couple times like that. And here's the thing, like all of us fall for lies, right? All of us believe a lie occasionally. Even like last week, I don't know if you spotted the lie in the sermon. Last week, I believed this lie. I said that Bieber ate burritos sideways on a park bench with jorts on. It seemed true to me and I believed it, but it was actually an elaborate hoax and I feel embarrassed about it. But most of the time, it really doesn't matter if we believe a lie. We get past it, or we learn the truth, or maybe we never do, but it doesn't really affect us. But sometimes when you believe a lie, and this is sort of the difficult thing, it's a very, very big deal, and I'm going to love having that in here. I just don't want Kate to put this in any slide. I don't want it on, right? Just all of a sudden she says lie. But most of the time, no big deal. Now, I want to introduce you to someone this morning that believed a lie. His name was Hiro Onoda, lived to be 90-something years old, do the math yourself, but lived to be an old man, lived a very interesting life. When he died, he had actually a camp for Japanese children that took them into the wilderness and did a lot of interesting things. He also lived in Brazil for a while, and Hiro was sort of an entrepreneur, and he started a cattle ranching operation in Brazil, and it actually grew quite large. He was very successful in that. But the reason why we know about Hiro, or the reason why at least you're going to learn about Hiro this morning, see, I've just been studying trivia all week, so that's why I know. But the reason why we're going to learn about this guy this morning is because, like many people his age, he was a veteran, shall we say, of World War II. Now, what makes Hiro a little different is he was part of the Axis Japanese powers. And Hiro didn't surrender until 1974. Here's the story. I mean, this is a true story. The story of Hiro is that he was dropped off in the Philippines in 1944, in the winter of 1944. He was given a three-man crew, four of them together, and they were set up as sort of a demolition sabotage unit. And so they were told to go into the mountains, and their mission specifically was to destroy crops and farms, because in the fight in the Philippines, they were like, if we can destroy their crops and farms, they'll starve, and everything's fair in love and war, basically war. So Hiro was sent into the mountains with his three-man crew, and then the war ended, and nobody told Hiro. And in fact, one of the sort of sad, interesting things in the story is, like, in 1946, they realized Hiro's still on mission. He's still destroying crops, and, you know, like, you think it's bad if, like, you've got a raccoon around the house. You know, it's like, we have a guy who's destroying your crops. He killed maybe 30 farmers that we know of. His crew was demolishing farms and farm equipment. And so in 46, they begin to drop leaflets and lay leaflets around for him. And Hero said that he looked at them and I like that he said determined them to be fake. And so he determined that the war was not over. And in the early 50s, he's still up there in the hills. He becomes sort of this legend, this crew. And one of his men, he says, defects, but actually wises up and goes, I think the war might be over. So one of his men walks away, but not Hero and the two others. In fact, one of them was shot in action long after the war is over, but shot by a farmer. And Hero nursed him back to health, and the three guys lived in the mountains for years. Now, during that time, as you can imagine, the locals and the Japanese government, it was becoming sort of an embarrassment for the Japanese government, they begin to try to reach out to Hiro and his crew and say, hey, the war's over, and it's been over for some time. And so they sent even like messages from his relatives, and Hiro thought, well, the war isn't over, so obviously, my relatives have been captured. So he ignored that. Truthfully, he ignored messages from his relatives. He ignored leaflets. At one point, they started leaving stacks of Japanese magazines around showing, this was in the 60s, like showing that life was going on in Japan. But Hiro was so convinced that the war was still going on that he disregarded them. In fact, he thought they were faked by the Americans or perhaps by some other power. So he was just certain it wasn't true. And so he literally stayed in the hills until March 9, 1974. Now, when Hiro finally, and I'll tell you the story of how he finally surrendered, because he's one of the toughest guys you ever meet. They uncovered, like, you might think, well, after 30 years, surely he's running out of supplies. He still had a rifle. He had over 500 rounds of ammunition, plus all of this other ammunition that he had captured. He had grenades, explosives. He literally could have lasted up in the hills forever. He was a resourceful guy. And they had plenty of food because their job was destroying farms, and he was smart enough to go, hey, maybe I'll take some before we destroy it. So he literally could have stayed on forever. Sadly, it started to wind down in the early 70s because both of his men were killed in action, actually, sadly, like killed by farmers and stuff fighting back against them. And it's said to be a hippie, basically, went into the wilderness looking for Bigfoot. This is the strangest story, but it's true. Looking for Bigfoot, met Hiro, hung out with him, and said, no, seriously, dude. The war's been over for like 30 years, and he showed him like a picture of a Datsun truck, like, look, we have Datsun trucks, and he was like, well, then we must have won. That's what he thought, like, oh, we're building Datsuns, and he's like, no, we've just won the economic war. We have not won the war. But it was interesting because finally, what they did, and this is such a strange story, but it's true. They finally went in Tokyo and found Hiro's commanding officer. They actually knew that at this point, Hiro's not going to believe anything we say. Everything he looks at is sort of colored by this idea that he has that the war's still going on. So in 1974, they went to a bookshop in Japan to a guy, I can't remember his name, but he actually was Hiro's commanding officer, the one who sent him there. And can you imagine 30 years later, like you're selling books in your store, you own a little bookstore, and they said, we need you to go to the Philippines and relieve one of your soldiers of their duty. And that's literally what happened. They flew this soldier from his bookshop in Tokyo over to Hiro with official orders saying, good job, you're done. And Hiro surrendered and went home to Japan. Now, Hiro was an interesting guy because he was given, he actually had a check waiting for him because he had technically been working for the last 30 years and he had hundreds of thousands of yen or whatever I think it's yen, but hundreds of thousands of dollars in our money waiting for him, and he actually gave that money away. He didn't even accept it. But here's the thing about Hiro, just such a complex guy because on one hand, probably the most honorable, like, you would want to hire Hiro for a job, right? Because he is not going to quit. On the other hand, like, severely misguided. But Hiro believed one thing. Hiro believed that the emperor of Japan was divine and that they would never surrender. Now, You might say, oh, I don't know, do they really think the emperor was God? No, not in the way we would think of, like, as Protestant Christians, as God, like all-powerful and all-knowing. That's not what they believed. But they did believe that their emperor, and this was a common belief in World War II era, was a descendant of the God, was not a man like you or I, was a God-like person with special powers who would never, ever surrender. And in fact, if you doubt that, and some people do, go, well, I can't imagine like such sophisticated people believing that. When the Allied forces won, one of the parts of the armistice and their eventual surrender was that they changed their constitution in 1946. And part of the new constitution said, by the way, the emperor is not God. He's just a man. That's actually in their new constitution. And side note about Hero, apparently Hero never got over this, because even though he surrendered and even though he gave his money away and even though he became wealthy, he actually later in his years, in his 70s, actually up until the late 90s, he was sort of petitioning the government to change the constitution back. So Hero, but that's what he believed, and it was a lie. Now, here's the thing about that. Like, that one lie that Hero believed had so many consequences. I mean, think about it. They believed 30-plus dead farmers and farmhands in the Philippines. Millions of dollars of crop damage, which obviously was devastating when they're trying to rebuild after the war. Three dead soldiers, you know, his soldiers under his command, all, you know, two of them died, not three. Two, one of them walked away and two of them died. 29 years of his life lost. This was a very, like, entrepreneurial, smart guy. But he believed this lie. He was taught this lie in grade school, in high school, in college. Like, that's what you were taught. The emperor is divine. He will never surrender. And to sort of carry this to its saddest, sort of largest point, that's really why bombs, atomic bombs, were dropped in Japan. Because we believed that they believed, and many of them did, that the emperor is divine, and we will never surrender. And so actually not millions, but 180,000 plus died in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. My brother actually married a Japanese national, and her mom's mom, so her grandmother, was from Hiroshima and had burns, terrible burns, even later in life, and he got to meet her. She died a couple years ago. So think about, like, this one lie that most people believed, what a huge consequence it had in that time. And so it made me think, like, wow, sometimes these lies we believe can color everything. Sometimes these lies we believe can just ruin our lives and the lives of others. So it made me think, you know, this week and the past few weeks thinking about this, like, well, what lie do you believe and what lie do I believe? You know, I'm sure there's something, right? I'm sure there's something that we believe that's not true, that's, and hopefully it's not going to get us killed or make us stay in the jungle for 29 years or cause atomic bombs to fall. But what could it be? And here's the question that's a little more frightening, I think, is sort of, would you even know? I mean, because if it's a lie and you believe it, probably wouldn't even know, right? And so I think that's kind of the exercise we want to work on this month. Last month we sort of worked on this idea of becoming unoffendable. But maybe this month we should start thinking through our lives and sort of hopefully develop a lie detector so that we can sort of discern, are we believing a lie? Now, I just want to throw a lie out here, and this is an example lie, and I'm not sure any of you actually believe this. I'll just say this upfront. It's not like your parents called me. Your parents called me, or somebody called me and said, I think my brother, or I think my sister, I think my daughter believes this lie. But it's a common lie, and it's a lie that, like the lie Hero believed, is sort of taught everywhere. It's sort of common knowledge. Like, if you would have went to Japan in the early 40s, and you asked people on the street, the way I understand it, and you said, is the emperor divine? Even if they didn't believe it, they would say, oh yeah, absolutely, because they'd feel embarrassed not to say that, because it was just taught everywhere, and that's the way they thought. And so here's a big lie that we have in our society, and it's an old lie, and it's a pretty good lie, that you are just a physical body. Not that you have a physical body, we all know that. But just this idea that you are just a physical body. You're just you. And there's nothing else. Like, you're an animal. And we can explain how you got here, and you weren't created. You happened. And this is sort of common. This is science, and we understand all of how this works, and you are just a physical body. Now, I'm going to say it's a lie. But let me say this. It's an easy-to-believe lie, and it's a pretty good lie. Because if you've, you know, and it's sort of understandable why we think that now, because we've actually dissected human bodies. Like, there was a time when we really didn't know what was going on inside, and there was a time when we really, even if people had dissected bodies, they weren't sure what they were looking at, but we've become so sophisticated, and we have such an understanding of medicine and such an understanding of how the body works. It's pretty clear, you know, I've read all of these little directions, all of these indications here, and none of them say spirit or soul. And in fact, if you think about it, like, there was a time when we would say, and in fact, the New Testament used the word heart a lot. And the reason why it uses heart is not because Jesus believed that your soul was inside the organ that pumps your blood, but to them, the heart was the center of being. And this is another thing that makes it confusing, is when you read scripture, when you read even old Greek writings, they're sort of interchangeable words for that part of you that can't be seen. It's spirit or soul or heart, and now we would say consciousness. So it's very confusing. So it's very easy why we would sort of think this, because it makes sense, because you can't see a spirit. You can't see a soul or a consciousness. And sort of the more we understand the body, the more we know there's not a part in there, that because we've had like heart transplants and people still have a soul. Even Dick Cheney had a heart transplant, and he still has a soul. It's true. Like, I know nobody believed that was going to happen, but it happened. Why are my Dick Cheney jokes years late? I'm sorry. But anyway, that was last week. And at a time, we thought, well, it's in your brain, but the more we understand the brain, we realize, like, oh, we can't replicate the brain, but we're getting pretty close, and we understand there are actually machines that can think faster than our brain, so our consciousness is not our brain. And to be honest, and to be, you know, just to look at what we know from science, is that we have a lot of the same responses, and we're a lot like an animal. I mean, we have a dorsal fin and blubber. Well, not the dorsal fin, but you know what I'm saying? Like, and in fact, they say I used a dolphin, even though physically, it doesn't line up very well, but dolphins are super sophisticated, and they used to say they were almost as smart as a human, and now I believe that dolphins are smarter than us. I'm just saying, like, I think after this last year, I'm like, dolphins are actually smarter than humans. Pigs are about as, and we eat them. But we have a lot of not just, you know, physical characteristics of primates and animals, but we respond in much the same way. Like, you have a fight, flight, freeze, you know, response that a squirrel has. You know, like, we as humans, like, we go, oh, we're so advanced, but you know that thing where the squirrel gets in the road and goes, and you're like swerving? Well, you don't. You just run over him, but I'm a good person, so I'm like swerving back and forth, about to flip my van. But we have that same thing. We find that people respond sort of like squirrels. We'll fight. Well, they don't fight, but we'll fight, or we'll freeze, or we have these same sort of responses, these same sort of needs. Obviously, we have the need to eat for reproduction, for all of these things. And so you could sort of see why we would go, well, the more we learn about animals, maybe humans are just animals. And here's another thing. Your body does not lose 21 grams after you die. I know that's like a big internet thing going, no, they tried it. Like, they killed someone on the surgery table and it was 21. No, that's not true. Probably the only, and it's a very small amount, so they've done some studies in this to disprove this. You probably sweat a lot as you die. I don't know, sweaty business. But there is no truth to the fact you lose, because the soul has no mass. The soul is something you can't see, the consciousness, or if we want to call it the heart or the spirit. Now, here's the funny thing. Even though we're all taught this in school, and even though sort of if you ask somebody on the street and they go, do you think humans are an animal, or do you think they're so, they would probably say, yeah, you know, is there an afterlife? I hope so. But here's the thing. In spite of all of that, the latest study shows that 62% of Americans believe in an afterlife. If you ask them, 62% will say, I believe there's something after. I believe there's something in the human body that lives on after the body dies, that we have a spirit or soul. Not a religious belief, but just this belief that we go on after we die. Now, before you get too excited about that and sort of raise your hands in victories and go, oh, look at this, we believe in the afterlife, 73%, also new facts, 73% of people believe that there's an afterlife for your pets. So I was thinking about this, like, Americans now believe that you are 11% more likely to go to heaven as a cat than a human. And so I don't know if we should even believe what Americans believe. But here's the thing, when I look at those statistics, I think maybe a better way of putting it is how many people hope for an afterlife, right? Like all of us would hope there's something beyond this body, because we all know people who've died and we would say they died too young, or even if someone dies at an older age, you just go, oh, I hope there's something. I hope I'll see him again, you know, and we have all these things, like we get a tattoo or we build a race car or we do something and we put pictures on our wall and we go, oh, I want to remember them, and this is, and I know she's here, I know my mom's here, and I know my dad's still watching. And so I think maybe a better way to say this is, even though we're sort of taught that there is no scientific proof, we can't see any hope of an afterlife, I would say that most of us, in America at least, hope that there's more than just this body, that we're not just a body. But I think the real question is, what percentage of Americans are actually preparing for an afterlife, actually living their life in such a way that shows that the afterlife exists? Because it's one thing to just kind of hope, like, yeah, I hope when I die, you know, there's a heaven, or I hope when I die that I'll be able to still exist. But Hiro Inada did not live that way, did he? Like, maybe there was a lot of people that believed that the emperor was divine and that Japan would never surrender, that they would fight to the last child with a stick. That was the way they would say it. Like, 150 million people will fight to the death. And Hiro believed it so much, he stayed in the jungle for 29 years. And so I don't know, when I look around, if all of us believe so much that there's an after. Jesus said it this way. Jesus said these words that it's pretty interesting when you look at it from Jesus' perspective, because he kind of gets to the heart of this thing that we struggle with when we go, are we just animals? Are we just a human body? Is there something more? Do we have a soul? Do we have a spirit? Is there something about our consciousness that's bigger? Jesus said this, he said, don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. For wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will also be. See, Jesus understood that if you actually believed that there was more to you than just this physical body, if there was something that would live on later, then you would want to prepare for that, that you would act in that way. And so he said that. He said, your eye is like a lamp that provides light for your body. And when your eye is healthy, your whole body is filled with light. This is the same idea we've been thinking about so far, going, if you believe a lie, it could color everything you think. Like Hiro believed this lie that, oh, Japan will never surrender. So when he saw a picture of a Datsun truck, he goes, oh, maybe we won. He didn't think, oh, well, they've surrendered and gone on and actually are rebuilding their economy. He just never even considered that. He was like, well, if there are Datsun trucks, then the emperor is alive and we have won. It says, but when your eye is unhealthy, your whole body is filled with darkness. When you believe a lie, it affects everything. And if the light you think you have is actually darkness, how deep the darkness is, if you believe a lie, he's like, how twisted does that get? No one can serve two masters, for you will hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. That is why I tell you, do not worry about everyday life, whether you have enough food or drink or enough clothes to wear. Isn't life more than food and your body more than clothing? And that's where it gets really sticky. And this is why people hated Jesus, because he makes us think like, okay, if I believed there is something more, if I believed there was something beyond that, then what would I be doing about it? But would I be preparing for that? Or would I be spending all of my time? And this is the tricky question, like, what percentage of our time is spent just caring for the needs of our body? And you might go, well, I take a shower, I eat lunch and I sleep, but that's it. No, it's not. Like, we eat and we sleep and we entertain our bodies. And maybe you go, well, I go to school, I'm learning for the future. Yeah, for your future success. And you're feeding your brain with information, maybe, but it's all so much of our time. And if you had to sit down, and maybe you should do this exercise, like, how much of my time is spent caring for my body? And you might go, well, I have a family, I care for them. Yes, they are your progeny. They are part of your body. They are part of your clan. And as humans and animals do, that's part of caring for ourselves, is caring for our family and clan. So it gets really interesting when you start thinking, like, if I believe there's an eternity, if I actually believed that I'm not just an animal, if I actually believe that there's something beyond this, that I'm more than just a conscious ape, what am I doing about it? And so Jesus cut to the heart of that. He's like, isn't your life more than just food and clothing? And we would add maybe healthcare to that. Because as humans, it's amazing. If you look at end-of-life healthcare, we will spend most of our net worth in the last couple years of our life just trying to stay alive for a little bit longer. Which makes me think maybe we don't truly believe there's something more. Maybe we hope it, but we're not really sure. And now here's a problem when you just go, okay. And you're probably thinking this, like, what would be the problem of me just being an animal? I mean, it makes sense. Well, the problem is when we listen to our bodies, they want things that aren't good for them, right? Like, we put stuff out in the lobby that's not good for you, and you all ate it. At least I did this morning. It's like we want so many things that aren't good for us, so we can't really trust these bodies. And here's another thing that's even a bigger problem. Like, it's a big enough problem that we want so many things that will harm us. So when we just go, hey, I'm an animal, I'll do what this animal wants to do. I have instincts, I have drives, but it's very self-destructive. Here's another problem, is because we live together and we're not the only one on the planet, our bodies want things that aren't good for everybody else, right? Like, if we just do what we want to do, if we just live a life that's like animal in nature, like, I'll take what I want, I'll do what I want, I'll live how I want, it begins to hurt everyone around us. And so Paul said it this way, and see if this doesn't ring true, even though it's an old writing. It says the sinful nature, he's talking about this split between our body and that other thing. The sinful nature wants to do evil, which is just the opposite of what the Spirit wants. And this is not our spirit, but the Spirit of God working through us. This is to Christians. So it does just the opposite of what the Spirit wants. And the Spirit gives us desires that are the opposite of what the sinful nature desires. And you and I have all experienced that, especially if you're a Christian this morning, where you go, hey, I've got this plan and I think I'm going to do this. And then we don't. He said, these two forces are constantly fighting each other. So you are not free to carry out your good intentions. And you have to at least admit that part is true, right? That part is true, that we can have very good intentions. And if there wasn't something else in us, then our good intentions would win every time. Like, every time you made a New Year's resolution, you'd be well on your way to have completing that. Here we are in November, you're like, hey, resolution's almost done, right? No, because we had this intention. But our body, even if it's, I'm not even, you don't even have to be a Christian this morning for this to be true. You and I not only do not keep the rules, we don't even keep our own rules. Like, we make a resolution or we have a good intention, and especially then if you're a Christian, you go, I think God wants me to do this. And we go, I'm going to do this. And then, we just don't, because it's difficult, because our body wants something else. So I think the simplest way, and this is a huge oversimplification, and Paul would be very angry at me, but if you read scripture, I think the way I've come to think of it is that you are not an animal, but your body is. I know that doesn't quite make sense, but think of it like this. Like, in the Old West, imagine you had a horse, and you had to ride on that horse everywhere you went, and in fact, in the Old West, your life depended on that horse, really. Like, if you're out in what would that be? The prairie, or out in the old westerny place, whatever that would be called. See, my brain's all lost with trivia now. But if you were out there and without a horse, you would die. Like, you couldn't even walk out of there alone. And so you'd be very dependent on your horse, wouldn't you? They were very dependent. Like, your life depended on having a horse. Now, Here's the thing, and this has always been a struggle with us, because some people said, well, okay, so the spirit is good, your consciousness is good, your soul is good, but bodies are bad and dirty, they're animals, so we shouldn't pay any attention to them. No. And that was called Gnosticism, and that actually raised its head soon after Christianity began. And if you want to talk Gnosticism, you can read tons of New Testament scripture that where they were just fighting this idea that, oh, the body's bad, the body is evil, the body's like, no. Body's not evil. Your horse isn't bad. Your horse is keeping you alive. But here's the thing that every cowboy would know, and I know today, like, you don't totally listen to the horse, right? Like, you'd never see a cowboy wake up in the morning and go, my horse is important. You would care for that horse. You would feed that horse. You would meet the needs of that horse. But you wouldn't go, hey, horse, where are we going today, right? And that's the idea that Paul gave of our bodies. Like, they're animals. And they're important, and you better nourish them. He said Paul even said bodily exercise is good. He didn't say it was bad. He didn't say your body's evil. He said bodily exercise is good, but it's even more important that we build this soul, this spirit, this consciousness. So you'd be a fool to abuse your body. You'd be a fool to abuse your horse if you depend on your horse, but my goodness, you wouldn't let it decide everything it wanted to do. And in fact, you might have to do things the horse didn't want to do, right? Like, you might have to ride it a longer distance than it would want in order to save your own life, in order to, and then you'd want to let it rest. And so this is the idea we find in Scripture, this tension between, hey, our bodies are important, and our bodies are animals, and yes, they do have the same instincts that other animals have, but we don't necessarily, in fact, we probably shouldn't just listen to them and give in to their desires. And so, quite frankly, it seems like extra work, doesn't it? Like, ugh. Great, it's hard enough being human. It's hard enough, like, having a human body. But now I have to be more than that. I can't just be an animal. I can't just follow my instincts and my wants and my desires. I have to sort of, oh. And it's difficult, it seems like. But I want to read one thing as we close out here. And this is a thing that I think should give you a reason to, at least, even if you don't believe this, even you go, no, I don't believe that, Don. Nobody's ever seen a soul. Nobody's ever seen a spirit. Probably just an animal, or, and this is more likely, it's probably not that you believe that. It's probably not even that you would tell me that this morning. Yep, I believe there's nothing inside except an animal, and you probably wouldn't say that, but this lie can sort of creep into our lives, because everybody sort of, even if they don't believe it, they'll go, yeah, that's true, kind of like people in Japan would have said, yeah, the emperor is divine, so this can creep into our world, so we only spend our time caring for our physical body and our physical needs and our physical desires and our, but I want to give you a reason to think a little differently, because this is so, so powerful, because number one, and this is just true, when everybody is just a body, well, nobody really flourishes. We don't want to live in that world, but there's something better. And this is written by the Apostle Paul to the Corinthians. And he just said these, just a few sentences, but they're so powerful. He says, that is why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. For our present troubles are small, and they won't last very long. Yet they produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. So we don't look at the troubles we can see now. Rather, we fix our gaze on things that cannot be seen. For the things we see now will soon be gone, but the things we cannot see will last forever. Now, this is really good news, especially if you're dying. And the bad news is, we're all dying, right? Now, it doesn't feel like that when you're long, and when you're young, especially look up in the gallery up there in the upstairs. You guys all feel like you're going to live forever, and every day you get stronger, and every day you get smarter, and every day you get faster, and that is so true, and God bless you. It's a great time to be alive. But some of us down here on the ground floor that are a little older, every day you get a little slower, and every day you get a little fatter and tireder and more brittle. And the truth is, though, and this is really a bummer thing to say this morning, but we're all dying. Every day we are dying, and so this is true for all of us. But man, even though that's kind of a bitter pill to swallow, how cool is this? Because we've all got troubles. We've all got things that are tough to deal with. And so Paul said, That it wasn't just about sort of surviving those troubles, surviving those obstacles, surviving these challenges that we said. He said, for our present troubles are small and won't last very long. And then he's saying, yet they produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. See, Paul saw a hope of a world where the things that are so painful could be leveraged. The things that are so sort of devastating to us in our human body could actually be leveraged to make us better for eternity, sort of like some pain, lots of gain. I mean, this is amazing. And it's not that we go, oh, well, I can't wait to go through troubles because I could use that to further my eternity, to build my soul. No, you wouldn't want that. But Paul's saying it's possible. And so when those things come, we could actually have a stronger soul and a stronger spirit. And through the power of Jesus inside us, Spirit of God, they could produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and lasts forever. And if you'd play another song for us, I've got one more thing to tell you. And this is pretty powerful. And see, this is a reason, I think, to do something a little difficult. And it's the cornerstone of this whole thing we call Christianity. Because as I told you, and as anyone would tell you that has a brain in 2018, man, you can't see a soul. We can't find any evidence of a spirit inside the human body. And yeah, quite honestly, our bodies are a lot like the other animals. And in fact, we like to say we're more advanced, but our bodies are not more advanced. I mean, we can't run as fast as a cheetah. There's so many things that we can't do that the other animals can do, but there is something different about us. And it's a thing you can't see. And so Paul said the things that we see, like the things that we see, the physical needs and the physical structures around us and like the animal kingdom that we are as human bodies, he said that will soon be gone. But he said that soul, that spirit, that other thing within us, that would last forever. And so I want to pray with you. And I'd love, love, love for you to explore in your life, like, is that true? And if it's true, what are you doing about it? Dear Jesus, we're fearfully and wonderfully made. I am so, so grateful for our human bodies. They really are amazing. We may not be the fastest animal or maybe the smartest animal, who knows. And we're certainly very grateful for all of the abilities you've given us. But God, we are dying every day. We are mortal. And we know we're mortal. That's the difficult thing. So God, I pray that you would help us. Help us to answer this question. And then if we answer it, that we are there more than our bodies. God, I pray that you would help people in this group. People who've heard this and people who go, yeah, I think that's true. God, I pray that you would help us to do something about it, to begin to prepare for that long, long future of eternity in these temporary bodies. And God, we're so grateful for this opportunity. In your name we pray, amen.